This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Arena Grosu with us on the program. Arena is the director of the Center for Human Dignity at Family Research Council in Washington, D.C., where she focuses on sanctity of human life issues ranging from conception to end-of-life care. Arena's writings have appeared in USA Today, National Catholic Register, Washington Times, and the Congressional Quarterly, just to name a few. She recently hosted a lecture at FRC about the current status of euthanasia and physician-assisted suicide, and we're going to be talking with her about these important end-of-life issues and their status in the United States. Arena, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, we're delighted to have you. First, if you would, Arena, define euthanasia for us, and how does physician-assisted suicide relate to euthanasia?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of confusion about the two words, and they're not interchangeable. So euthanasia is when a physician or another third party administers the medication in order to kill the person. And this is illegal in the U.S. and all 50 states. Physician-assisted suicide is when the patient self-administers the medication and determines whether or not and when to do this in order to kill himself or herself. And the physician helps by prescribing or dispensing substances in lethal quantities that hasten death. Now, what we have to keep in mind is that basically, either of these two is an action or omission that with the intention of causing death, whether to oneself or to a third party, in order to alleviate suffering. And both are morally unacceptable, and taking the life of someone or taking your own life is a grave evil. So we have to keep this in mind.
Well, absolutely. Now, what about worldwide? How many countries currently allow euthanasia in some form?
So, as of 2002, euthanasia is only legal in the Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg. Assisted suicide is legal in Switzerland, Germany, Albania, and it's legal in three U.S. states, Oregon, Washington, Vermont. Now, Colombia and Japan have contradictory laws and court precedent on the issue. So, there, it's a little confusing because, for example, in Colombia, legalized euthanasia has been around since 1997, but was never ratified by Colombia's Congress. In Japan, there's a law against euthanasia, but since 1962, there have been criteria laid out for performing it legally. Now, obviously, like I said before, in Belgium, it's legal. In Canada, as of now, the euthanasia bill is dead, but it's a threat there. In India, it's illegal, but it's often carried out without any consequence. And in Australia, there's a lot of threats right now. Dr. Philip Nietzsche, who founded Exit International, is a prominent speaker on euthanasia. And even though it's currently illegal, it was legal for a period in the Northern Territory. And I think that he and his groups are going to continue pushing it there. In England, it is illegal, but a doctor claims that the NHS kills off about 130,000 elderly people through an assisted death pathway called Liverpool Care Pathway, and that's for terminally ill patients. And in France, it's moving closer to legalization because a panel that was set up by the president there recommended legalized euthanasia as of December 2013. So we see this popping up all over the world. There's cases where it's been legalized and it's been made illegal, or it's kind of going under the radar and it's happening. So it's a threat all around the world.
Wow. Well, let's talk about Belgium, which recently enacted a sweeping euthanasia law that actually allows children under the age of 18 to be euthanized. Tell us about that law and the dangers it presents to the sanctity of human life, not just in Belgium, but worldwide.
Well, Belgium shocked the world community because it passed this law that an extended euthanasia to children. And so the Belgian Act was first for adults was passed in May 2002. It went in effect in September 2002. But now, as of February 2014, Belgium has legalized euthanasia by lethal injection for children. And what's really surprising is that 75% of the Belgian population is in favor of euthanasia for children. And what we see is that obviously children can't make such a choice and should not be even presented such a choice. They're being obviously not taken care of by their own parents and their doctors by even recommending death as an option. And what we see in this is that there are no limits to the dangers of euthanasia, and so and as we've seen in other countries, it doesn't stop with the terminally ill. It extends to people who are depressed, and so it really opens up Pandora's box, and it gives a power to an adult or to someone who is in a position of strength to make a life or death decision for someone who is vulnerable. And as we see in Belgium, the children are very vulnerable and weak, especially sick children.
Are there specific conditions in the Belgium law regarding a terminal illness or something like that, or is it just pretty wide open?
Well, it's mostly for that, but as we've seen in other cases, a parent can decide that this condition or that condition, that their child shouldn't live through that condition, and so they can make that decision at any point themselves.
Well, that is shocking. Let's talk about the United States then. You mentioned earlier that physician-assisted suicide is legal in three states. Well, what are the circumstances of the extent of the legalization of physician-assisted suicide in those three states, and what do you see as efforts across the country with respect to that to expand it?
So, as I mentioned before, euthanasia, which is someone else administering the deadly dose, is not legal in the U.S., but assisted suicide, where the person himself or herself administers it, is legal in Oregon, Washington, and Vermont. Now, in Oregon, it was passed in 1994 by a public referendum, and it's the first U.S. state to legalize assisted suicide. And in Washington, it was passed in 2008 by a public referendum, and it was a copy of the same law that was passed in Oregon was applied in Washington. And most recently in Vermont, it was passed last May 2013, by legislation. Now, there's some confusion on Montana and New Mexico. Some people will include those as part of places where it's legal in the U.S. In Montana, it's not legal. Assisted suicide is not legal. But a court case recognizes a statutory consent defense for those aiding a suicide. So that's a protection for a doctor. He can use the defense of consent. And in New Mexico, the ruling was just appealed. So it's not legal, but it still remains a threat. Other places where there's current threats are in New Jersey. Two companion assisted suicide bills were introduced in 2013 and died. And really, Governor Chris Christie is keeping things at bay, but it's still a threat there. In California, the group Compassion and Choices, which I call the Planned Parenthood of the euthanasia and assisted suicide movement, launched a campaign to legalize it there in California, as well as in Colorado. In Texas, we saw this little girl, she was on in the national news, Natalie Newton, who her parents and her grandfather let die by way of being starved to death. And they are pushing for assisted suicide to legalize it in Texas. But in 2014, six state legislatures considered proposals similar to the one that passed in Vermont. What we have to keep in mind is that it's not, even though it doesn't get as much of attention as other issues, there are active interest groups, like the one I mentioned, Compassion and Choices, that are strategically paving the way at the state level for the acceptance of euthanasia, or in the very least, the physician-assisted suicide. And they are putting money behind this. They have media strategists, they have lobbyists, they are putting ads so to make it acceptable. And so we have to look at this. Right now, Compassion and Choices is active in Arizona, California, Colorado, Florida, Hawaii, Illinois, Maryland, and New Mexico, among other states, trying to really push these through. We had wins, actually, in Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and of course, as I mentioned, New Mexico, where bills that were introduced for assisted suicide were defeated. And so that's a very good sign, but we have to keep these at bay. basically.
Absolutely. What do you think is the driving force behind those that are pushing for the legalization of euthanasia and assisted suicide? What's driving them?
What's driving them is this idea or this philosophy that people should have a quote-unquote choice at the end of life. But I think what's involved with it more is this fascination with death. And having read a little bit about compassion and choice, the person who started it, basically his wife was terminally ill and he decided to poison her coffee. And then he wrote a book in 1991, which became a New York Times bestseller. And it was a book about how to commit suicide. There's this fascination with death, and in actually the first euthanasia society was started in 1938 in the U.S., in New York City. And it's been a movement since then, and it goes back to the history of eugenics in America, too, which not many people are familiar with back in the 1930s and beforehand. But I would say that where we're going to see a push for it on a more practical level is that we have a population crisis. So we have a longer life expectancy. People now are living 30 years longer than they did in 1900. So you have people living longer. We also aborted a major component of our population. 56 million unborn babies never had a chance to live, which means that you have a number of people who are not contributing, could have been contributing to society economically and in so many other ways that are not. And we also have a declining birth rate. And then add on to that the economic factors and the healthcare situation, and you have a setup of euthanasia becoming, or assisted suicide becoming justified, because you have this growing elderly population and not enough young people to support the elderly and not enough economic resources to support the elderly. So it's going to become something that we're going to see more and more of. And to that, I wanted to say that one of these euthanasia groups, they met back in 1985 and they've met every year since. But one of their strategies is to make it okay to take away life, to take away food and water from someone. And they said that if we can do that and that becomes an acceptable practice, then at one point we can introduce assisted suicide as the option, because at that point people say, well, we don't want to see this person suffering and dying a slow death of 9-10 days without food and water. Why don't we just basically have mercy on them and put them out of their misery and let's give them an injection? And so they're incrementally trying to introduce this into public and popular thought.
Unfortunately, we're almost out of time for this show, but where can our listeners go to learn more about all that you and the Family Research Council are doing to address these end-of-life care issues and the resources that are available?
Please visit www.frc.org. Under there, we will have major life issues as well as marriage issues and otherwise, and you can click on each of the life issues. There's a link for euthanasia, and under there are resources. So I would recommend for anyone to visit frc.org. I gave a presentation on this, and it's publicly available online. So if you go to frc.org, you will find it there, and you can watch the presentation as well. And we always have other resources for you. We have publications and lectures that you can watch over your computer on a lot of life issues so that you can stay updated on them.
Well, that's great, and I think I would really encourage our listeners to avail themselves of those resources. Clearly, this is an extremely important issue. Well, Irina Grossu, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us on Family Policy Matters and for your great work defending the sanctity of human life at the Family Research Council.
Thank you so much for having me on, and keep fighting the good fight.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-919-919. 800-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.